Today's guest is a friend of mine who I've known for over 40 years, but he is now an author, William E. McClintock, a friend of mine I've known as Sarge. Sarge, I would like to know more about you, the writing process, and how you got to where you are right now in this entire process. Sarge McClintock.
It was essentially a bucket list thing. I simply wanted to have written a book, specifically a novel. Kind of cut my teeth on John Steinbeck and Ernest Hemingway and Jack Kerouac, to name some American authors, and I wanted to leave a book behind. It wasn't important to me that it be successful. I had no pretensions toward making money or achieving fame. I simply wanted to have written a book. When you do that, you have to decide, first of all, what kind of a book. I knew it was going to be a novel, but what kind of a novel? I decided, after much thought, to write a Western, simply and only because it seemed like a very simple, easy genre to deal with. Writing a first novel, I wasn't going to sit down and try to, as Hemingway put it, wrestle with Dostoevsky. I was just going to write a book, and a Western novel seemed like a very easy place to start. This, in spite of the fact, Scott, that I don't read the damn things. I don't read. I don't like Western novels. It seems that if you've read one, you've read them all, especially the highly vaunted Louis L'Amour. But I do like, having said that, I do like Western movies, you know, as a genre. I'm a sucker for a great Western. Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven comes to mind. So I sat down to write a novel, and I decided it would be a Western because a Western seems a simple place for a beginner to start. Maybe I would turn out to be pretty good at it, and I would write another novel after that. Or maybe it would turn out to be one gigantic pail of frustration, and I would never write again. I didn't know, but I sat down to start and find out. Found out that I was right about one thing. The Western genre is a very simple one, and it was easy for me to do. I had misgivings within the genre, knowing that given my background, I could write the male characters well enough and easily enough. I knew I could deal with the gunfighters and the cowboys. But I had some misgivings about writing women, and the novel. The plot that had coalesced in my mind was a couple of women characters were intrinsic. They were very, very important to the outcome of the novel. And I doubted, frankly, my ability to write women convincingly. And yet, during the writing, I found out that I was wrong about that. I wrote women, I think, very, very well, very lovingly and affectionately. And when all was said and done, when that first book was done, I think my women characters are really the strongest. They're the ones that I like the best. But then having written that first book, I thought I was done with the Western genre. I wasn't going to write any more Westerns. But you know what happened, Scott? Toward the end of that first book, which is called Widowmaker, toward the end of Widowmaker, a character appeared totally spontaneously, a little female Pinkerton detective who I just fell in love with. I just loved that character. Now, she's based on a real-life person. Alan Pinkerton, in point of historical fact, had a female agent that did a lot of dangerous work for him. She was a bit of a female James Bond, very attractive, used her looks to great advantage in the job. Among other things, she infiltrated the Molly Maguires for the Pinkertons and was instrumental in bringing them down. Inspired by that real-life woman, I kind of styled this character in Widowmaker after her. Now, this character appears very late in the book, like I say, spontaneously. I didn't expect it. As a writer, I'm what they call a pantser. I write by the seat of the pants. I don't know what's going to happen next. I am absolutely incapable of writing the way some guys do, which is to fill one wall full of post-it notes and keep copious notes on everything and know exactly where I'm going every step of the way. I can't write that way. I have to write kind of by the seat of the pants. I just fly by the seat of the pants, and I sit down to my computer, and I don't know where it's going that day, and that's a great deal of the fun for me. I really enjoy that. So that's how it happened to be that this little female character who was so instrumental to the plot happened spontaneously at very near the end of the book.
Third book or second book that the female character
this
arrived?
This was the first book.
First book in The Widowmaker, the female character
first
arrived.
First book, Widowmaker. Yeah, this character appeared. I just fell in love with her. And I thought I was through writing Westerns, but the fact is I liked this character so much that I wanted to deal with her some more. I wanted to explore her more. I wanted to get to know her better. And so I wrote a sequel to Widowmaker, titled The Hunt for Bloody Bill Anderson, And in this book, I gave her a very prominent part. She, like, co-stars with my gunfighter protagonist in this one. And she, and I really enjoyed writing The Hunt for Bloody Bill Anderson because she was so central to it. And so now, okay, The Hunt for Bloody Bill Anderson is finished, and now I'm really done with Westerns. I'm gonna, I have found out along the way that I actually can write, and I enjoy the heck out of it. I guess I'm going to be a writer. I decided to write a third book. It's not going to be a Western. I'm talking about it on the phone one day with a friend of mine in L.A. who does a talk show over there on the radio. This is a woman who knows a lot about the business of writing. She's not a writer herself, but she knows writers and publishers and agents. I conferred with her quite often along the way on the business end of writing. And I told her I had a new novel in the works and it wasn't going to be a Western. And she said, wait, what? It's not going to be a Western. And I said, no. She said, you got to write one more Western. You got to write one more with the same character, the same gunfighter hero. I said, why? She said, well, make three books with the same protagonist as a series. And a series always sells better than one or two books out there by themselves. So you got to write one more. That made sense. Plus, I may not be in love with the Western genre as a genre, but I really did like my gunfighter, and I really loved the women that I had created. So it wasn't that odious a task to go back and write a third book. So I wrote a third one. Now, it so happened that in The Hunt for Bloody Bill Anderson, I killed my hero off. My gunfighter got killed in that one. And I did that intentionally because, rather like Conan Doyle, I was tired of Sherlock Holmes. I wanted to force myself to move on to something else, and so I killed off my hero. Well, now my writer consultant in L.A. tells me I've got to write a third book with the same hero. So there was only one way to do that, and that was to make it a prequel, set it in time before the first book, before Widowmaker. And so that's what I did. Conan Doyle, of course, labored mightily to bring Sherlock Holmes back to life. I didn't bother bringing my hero back to life. I just wrote a prequel and set it in time before the first book. There I had a series, a three-book series. And my consultant in L.A. was quite correct. It has really helped sales and been the right thing to do. But now I've moved on to a fourth book, and it's not a Western, and we can talk about that later.
Are you sure? Are you sure it's not a Western?
This one is not. You know what? I like my character so much, I may go back and write yet another Western. I can't do a prequel to the prequel, but what I might do, and I'm not going to torture the book and struggle to somehow bring him back to life as Doyle did with Holmes. I have, at the end of that second book, the one in which my hero gets killed, is revealed that he has had a son, a little boy, with this female Pinkerton detective that I like so much. Another piece of Western history that I'm quite intrigued by is the Mexican Revolution, mm-hmm. circa roughly 1916 to 1920. And I could, if I wanted to, use that little boy as the protagonist of another book. In other words, my gunfighter's son mm-hmm. could end up in the Mexican Revolution, fighting alongside or against, I haven't decided which, Pancho Villa. I don't know. That's just in the back of my mind, and that's just to give you a little idea of how writers think.
Well, that's just kind of amazing that you decided that I'm not going to write, and then, okay, one book, and then the second one just was birthed out of you, and then your friend tells you, hey, you need a trilogy, so Pistolero was it, and that was the prequel to the entire story. Now you've got a new book. I'm wondering what came first, the chicken or the egg here. Did you have an interest in Westerns before you moved to Arizona or Tucson or Tombstone? The place is just rife with stories in the wind.
That's a very insightful question. I'll tell you the answer. I have always been in love with Western history. I grew up in Wyoming, and my grandmother was a ranch cook. She worked the big spreads in southern Wyoming, the ZN Ranch, the Big Creek Ranch. As a kid living in Casper, I spent my summers with her. Come summer vacation, I went down to whatever ranch she was working on, spent the summer with her. My grandfather was kind of the last of the old-time horseback cowboys, and she was a ranch cook. And she imparted this love of Western history in me. I mean, she used to tell me stories. I remember jouncing along in an old pickup one time. She points out the window and says, now, just over that hill is a hole in the wall. Remember me telling you about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? And this was long before Paul Newman and Robert Redford. She told me stories about the hole in the wall gang. Another time she said, now see over there, that's the area where Tom Horn was working for the Swan Land and Cattle Company. Remember me telling you about him? And so I grew up with this stuff, Scott. I grew up with these stories and a love for it. Mm. And so when I hitched an RV up to the back of my pickup and decided to tour the country, I thought I was going to go off on a kind of a bucket list tour. I wanted to visit the Alamo, and I wanted to visit Civil War battlefields back east. But my first stop coming down south out of Montana was Tombstone. I wanted to go to Tombstone because I've, of course, been very intrigued by that whole Tombstone dynamic between Wyatt Earp and Morgan Earp and Virgil. Okay. I had done a lot of reading. I knew a lot about it. So my first stop was Tombstone. To make a long story short, I got stuck there. My RV tour ended there. I fell in love with the town. Because I had a background in law enforcement, I quickly fell in with the marshal's office and became a marshal. And that was ineffably cool, Scott, because in the Tombstone Marshal's office, up on the wall, there's a great big portrait, a blow-up picture of Virgil Earp. Virgil was the first Tombstone Marshal, and he, more than any of the Earp brothers, was the real lawman in the bunch. Wyatt was more of an entrepreneur, a businessman, always on the make for the buck. When they were in Tombstone, he owned a lot of mining properties. And that was his interest. He was the reluctant gunfighter. He was the reluctant lawman. Virgil was the real cop. They've got a picture of him up on the wall down there at the Tombstone Marshal's office. And I must say, it was really something to be part of that lineage, to be part of that historical line, to be a Tombstone Marshal. Wow.
Very special.
Yeah. My little bucket list RV tour has come to an end. I'm an Arizona guy now.
Let me just ask you about this, Sergeant. This is what amazes me about authors, is that you've got an idea. It's germinating in your head, and all of a sudden, it comes to birth. There literally is a muse that happens. There's times, you know, staring at the page, nothing's happening, and there's other times you can't stop. It's just, you have to write and write and write and write and write. So where do you find your muse, other than just looking out the window in Tombstone?
I go out in the desert a lot, partially because I just love the desert and I like to be there. And that works as my best muse. I just wander the hills. I wander the desert. I think about the book and the problems that I'm having with the plotting. And between you and me, Scott, I sometimes think that, you know, you hear a lot about writer's block. I sometimes think that writer's block is an affliction that only happens to guys like me, pantsers, guys that write by the seat of the pants. If you've got a wall full of post-it notes and you know exactly where the story's going every step of the way, why would you ever have writer's block? The reason I have writer's block is because I don't know what happens next. You know, I sometimes paint myself into a corner that I say, how do I get out of this? And so how do I get my hero out of this mess? I often just go out in the desert and camp and wander around and think about it. And I guess, as you put it, that's my muse, the desert.
Yeah, sometimes painting your heroes into a corner are some of the best and most genius moments in literature. That's it. Literally, the protagonist and the antagonist have to meet. And they have to go ahead and drill the protagonist down into the deepest depths of the most impossible moment in time. And then that's when all breaks loose. The genius is released and the ultimate battle between good and evil and everything else happens, and then hopefully a resolution that everybody is benefited by.
I've got a pal in Texas. He's a former newspaper man, and he kind of acts as my de facto editor. I send him my books as they're being written, and he therefore kind of reads them in a serialized form. He sends me back a lot of suggestions, most of which I take and some of which I don't. But one of the things he told me one time that I will never forget, he said, you know, Sarge, as I read a book, I'm constantly asking myself, am I pushing myself through this, or is this book pulling me through this? He calls it his push-pull test. Does he have to work to make himself read on and finish the book, or is he so engrossed that it just pulls him through? He said, I got to tell you, the best compliment I can pay you is that your books really pull me through, every one. So that's a great compliment. I try to write that way. One of the ways a good writer does that, pulls you through, is by making almost every chapter something of a cliffhanger. You finish that chapter and then you wonder, well, now what? Now what happens? And so, I wanted to go to sleep, but I think I'll read just one more chapter. And when you write with that in mind, you very often find yourself hanging from a limb out there over that precipice of that cliff, and you don't know what the heck you're going to do to get out of it. But
I'm wondering if you consciously set up the son of your hero in order to possibly spin him off. Was that a conscious effort, or was it like, hey, you know what, going back and looking back, I could use that as a spinoff and recreate? Did you see it later, or did you consciously know beforehand?
Later, really? Scott, only recently when my friend in L.A. asked me if I was going to write another Western, and I said, you know, I might, but my hero is really dead, and the only way to do that I could think of would be to use his son. No, that thought just occurred to me very, very recently. I didn't set him up with that in mind at all. I just wrote what I thought was involving him and his mother, who was the Pinkerton female James Bond. I just set them up in what I think was a very poignant epilogue to that book. No intention of ever going back and revisiting the son. And who knows, I, in all probability, I won't do that. I won't go back and use him in that way. But I could. And as I said, it's kind of in the back of my mind.
It's always convenient to have that, but I thought I was possibly working with the George Lucas of Western novels here, and you were setting us up for plush toys and everything else coming down the line.
No. I'll tell you what, I am writing a book now with that in mind, with a real series in mind, and we'll just see how that works out. This present book is set in present day. It's about a former Marine spec ops guy who gets involved with a Blackwater type organization, goes to work for a Blackwater type corporation, and thereby is involved in various shenanigans and adventures.
Sarge, I'm starting to see a trend here. You have law enforcement type of characters, as every writer knows. It doesn't matter where they're at. Doesn't matter what time they're at. Doesn't matter at all. It's all about the drama that you create, those relationships that you create, the scenarios that you present, and that protagonist and antagonist struggle that is literally driving the story that matters. It could be set anywhere and at any time, but with your military background, with your law enforcement background, I guess the old adage, write what you know, is coming true here.
I was just going to throw that line at you. Yeah, that's the oldest and probably best advice in writing, is write what you know. That's, of course, what I'm doing. I would love to be John Steinbeck, but that wasn't the path I took. That wasn't the path my life took. I write what I know. And you're quite right. Hemingway said, everything's a Western. Everything's a Western. There was a movie back in the 80s with Sean Connery. I forget what it was called now, but it was a science fiction thing. It was about a bunch of astronauts going to Saturn, as I recall. It was High Noon, is what it was. It was simply High Noon, brought into a sci-fi future. And so Hemingway was right. It's all a Western. This book I'm presently writing, almost done with, is set in modern day. My hero is something of a Jack Reacher, something of a James Bond, but it's all a Western. That's why it would be so easy to go back and do another Western. But you write what you know.
What drives you as a writer? What message do you like to give through? Right and wrong, good always wins type of thing, or the struggle that the hero has in order to be victorious? What is it exactly that is at the crest of your characters?
Probably the hardest question you've asked me yet. I think that the overall thrust of my writing is to give the reader an insight into a world which I treasure and which he, the reader, probably is not at all familiar with. The world of law enforcement, the world of special operations, military derring do. More than anything, I try to give the reader an insight into that world and the respect for it. I do not believe that the good guys always win, and that doesn't permeate my writing. I believe, as a Christian, that the good guys always win ultimately, but not necessarily in this world, you know, not necessarily in the here and now. And so my characters, my protagonists anyway, tend to be a bit cynical and a bit hard-edged and a bit weary, and of course they always prevail. Lee Child once said of his character, Jack Reacher, that he knows his readers. He knows what they want from Jack Reacher. Jack Reacher never backs down. Jack Reacher never loses a fistfight. So there is no nadir to the Reacher stories in a way that there seems to be an impossible bottomless pit that Jack Reacher can't crawl out of. Lee Child said he knows his readers don't want to read that. They don't want Jack Reacher to be that kind of guy. And instinctively, my own characters have followed that same pattern. I felt this about my characters before I ever heard that Lee Child said that. But as I said, Scott, it's the toughest question you've asked me yet, and not entirely sure of my answer, but I hope that fills in a few of the gaps.
The reason I asked this, Sarge, is because I know you, and I know that you love C.S. Lewis. When you read C.S. Lewis, you're not in the shallow end of the pool anymore. That's why I asked, if you bring that to your characters, is that one of the driving forces of your characters in order to display a larger truth when they go through these things? Do you find that just accidentally happens, possibly? Or is it something conscious that you're trying to achieve in your writing?
I think one of the interesting things about writing and writers is that whoever you are permeates your writing. Whoever you are comes through. Sometimes in subtle ways, sometimes like a sledgehammer. Yeah, I do try to convey those messages. The old phrase, forget who it was that said, I said that he himself was nothing. He was just standing on the shoulders of giants. That's certainly how I feel about C.S. Lewis. As I read him, I'm standing on the shoulders of a giant. I just finished reading a book called Go Down Together. It's by a writer named Jeff Gwynn, and at True West Magazine said it was the best book ever written about Bonnie and Clyde. Of course, one of the characters central to the lives of Bonnie and Clyde was a guy named Frank Hamer. He was the Texas Ranger who eventually set up the ambush that killed them. Hamer was an example of that. He was a tough-as-nails legendary Texas Ranger hired on special assignment by the state of Louisiana to deal with Bonnie and Clyde, and he did. Now, in the movie, Bonnie and Clyde, with, Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, Frank Hamer was played by Denver Pyle. He was depicted as kind of a bumbler who was captured by Bonnie and Clyde, and they humiliated him, took pictures with him, Bonnie with her arm around his shoulder and a cigar in her mouth, and him sitting there looking mortified. This was all lies. That never happened. Bonnie and Clyde could not kidnap Frank Hamer on their best day. When they encountered him, they died. I don't know why I brought up Hamer now, except that he's something of a hero of mine. He's just one of those ramrod, stiff, tough-as-nails Texas Rangers who stood for the right. He stood for the law. And so, yeah, my characters are a bit like Hamer, in a way. Another legendary Texas Ranger was a guy named James Gillette, and he once said something I'll never forget. He said, men like myself, who generally bring down the pests of society, must expect to be killed someday. And so, with that sad, cynical view of law enforcement, I write my books.
If you want to read any of William E. McClintock's writing, you can. I've posted the Amazon link.
You could read it as I wrote it, in the sequence I wrote it, Widowmaker, Bloody Bill, and Pistolero, or you could start with Pistolero. Works either way.
My good friend William E. McClintock, Sarge.